Welcome to the ULM Forum. I'm Jay Curtis. My guest today, Dr. Eric Pandy, is the interim provost here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. Welcome to the ULM Forum.
Hi, Jay.
You are no stranger to the KEDM studios. You're usually sitting, most recently sitting in this seat.
I sat on the other side of the board, and I have to tell you, I don't miss those early mornings. It was tough to get up and get that forecast ready.
Dr. Pandy did some work as a meteorologist here for KEDM, working with meteorology students in the atmospheric sciences program. So we were very glad to have all of them. One of those. Jared Floyd is now working professionally and still working with us, too. We're glad to have him.
Jared started a few years ago doing that while he was still a student here, and has been very successful, I think. He does a tremendous job in doing the forecast, representing the university and representing our profession.
And some background on you. You've been the Associate Provost of Academic Affairs.
Right. Since 2002, this past summer, with Steve Richter's being made interim president, I was appointed to the position of interim provost and vice president for academic affairs.
But before that, you were in atmospheric sciences.
I came to Monroe in 1987 as an assistant professor right out of graduate school and have loved it here since then.
Your background in meteorology is dealing with research on a very high level of academia.
Yeah, it was a different area of meteorology than what many people think about. My work for my master's degree was in an area of meteorology that blended meteorology with civil engineering and looked at floods and heavy precipitation events. Then for my doctoral work, I did work on cloud seeding projects, weather modification in West Texas, where they have a rather arid environment, and getting only 10 inches of rain a year, they really were looking for ways to augment the amount of precipitation they can get on their crops, into their lakes, and into the aquifer for their drinking water. So I did that for about 6 years, and before I came here, and it's been really exciting. I didn't think that I would ever need cloud seeding in Louisiana, but it turns out within 2 years of being here, I had somebody contact me locally who was interested in a cloud seeding project. So that never developed anywhere, but it surprised me.
Well, I should mention quite a few of your graduates who'd worked in the atmospheric sciences program while you were there are now working for the National Weather Service and in other high positions around the country.
Right. We have students scattered in the Shreveport office, the Lake Charles office, Jackson, Little Rock, let's see, where else, New Orleans, then all over the country. We have one of our students is a forecaster at the National Hurricane Center, Goddard Space Flight Center. So they're scattered around the country, and some of them are in the military, so they're deployed around the world, and we're very proud of the work that all of them are doing. They were and are an exceptional group of people.
Since then, working in administration and just this summer taking on the new challenge as interim provost, I wanted to ask, how is that going? Because you're both in some ways learning a new job, but also teaching your replacement as the associate provost for academic affairs.
Right. Dr. Bill McCown, who is a professor in the psychology department, agreed to do the job of interim associate provost for academic affairs that I had previously, and he's doing an exceptionally good job with it. And it's a real challenge. You're right. He's a very quick learner, so he and I sat down, you know, a little bit before he started, went through some of the procedures and where the projects were, and he's picked it up and he's been running with it. And, you know, we touch base once or twice a day and see how things are going. But it's exciting to be involved in this transition process. It's a whole new set of problems. It's a whole new set of people to work with. It's a new set of challenges ahead, and that energizes me. And it, you know, you do a job and you get to the point where you're comfortable in it, and now I'm out of my comfort zone. And so it's a challenge, but it's really exciting to take this on.
It can be good to be stretched.
It is. This job is definitely stretching me.
Well, working as associate provost, you already had a very close working relationship with Dr. Richter's. How is that changing moving into the interim provost position for now?
You know, as an associate provost, I was really a support for him, handling a lot of the details, where he handled more the big picture, the strategic and the policy issues. My job was to find where problems were occurring and fix them. to a large part. And then I had some responsibilities managing a few areas in the university that they would report through me to him. So I operated very much closely tied to him. As provost and vice president for academic affairs, I have essentially as being the chief operating officer and the chief academic officer for the university, I have a more autonomy in that relationship than I think existed before. It's perhaps in some ways closer, and in other ways we have to keep a separation there, because the president has a different set of responsibilities. When Steve was provost and focused largely in academic affairs, our relationship was fairly narrowly defined. Now he's got a much broader view of things. My view has broadened as well. We don't overlap quite as much, I don't think, as we did before, but it's still a very good relationship. I enjoy working with him.
And of course, all of that may change by this fall with the appointment of a new president.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the position I am in is I serve at the pleasure of the president. And when a new president is appointed, depending on who it is, Steve may go back into his position as provost and I go back to associate provost, or the president may change his mind and want to change the upper administration completely. And then I'll be back into the classroom, I hope, and which wouldn't be bad at all. I enjoy working with the students and doing some research.
One of the other topics we wanted to tackle today, dealing with a new law just going into effect July 1st about how textbooks are handled between publishers and universities. And you have kind of a unique perspective on that.
Right. I was a faculty member. I still consider myself a faculty member still, even though my primary responsibility is administration. I did teach last semester, taught a couple classes last year. You know, I spent from 1987 until the late 90s solely as a faculty member before I started getting into administrative aspects. I've seen the position of being a student in college. I've been a faculty member. I've been a department head. I've been a dean. And I've been in the vice president's position now. So, yeah, I can see things from a lot of different perspectives. When I was a student, the textbooks weren't as expensive, it didn't seem. You know, proportionally, they didn't eat up as much of a budget, I don't think, as they do now. But I believe it was probably during the 80s, textbook prices just seemed to explode. And students now, you know, it's pretty tough to come up with several hundred dollars in a semester to buy those textbooks that you have. A good science book or a good math book or something like that can cost you a couple hundred dollars. You know, and then you start to get into the medical areas, there may be several hundred dollars for a textbook. So it really eats up those resources, and you know, that's part of the cost of an education, but it hurts them.
So the new law, what are the things it's going to be doing? It'll be requiring publishers to provide textbook price information to professors. Now, that's something that would seem like common sense, but it's not really.
No, and that's something that you typically would not get from the publisher when they were coming around and they were offering you the book. They would tell you the book has this feature in it, and you can get a slide set with it, and you can get a Blackboard module with it, and all these things. You can get a CD bound with it, but they wouldn't tell you how much it would cost. And really, it was up to us to say, okay, well, what's the price going to be? And I can tell you that there are faculty that will make the decision not to use a textbook because it simply costs too much. They don't want to put that burden onto the students.
And that's really what the law is designed to do, is to help keep that from being passed on. It's the Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008. And it does outlaw the automatic bundling of textbooks with the peripheral materials.
Right. And that's another thing. You know, we have to remember that these are corporate entities, you know, the publishers are. And so they are trying to make a profit. If they're a public entity, they have their stockholders to answer to. So they are trying to maximize their gains, but it often was the case that a book rep would come in and talk to a faculty member about a textbook, and they would say, "You have this book is offered with a CD, so that bundle will cost X amount. But a few years ago, we really tried to inform the faculty that they didn't have to accept those bundles in many cases. They could take the textbook just by itself, and in a lot of ways that would reduce the cost to the students. Because in many cases, if they sell that book back, if they would attempt to sell that book back, they couldn't if there was a CD bundle to it, because the CD case would be opened. It couldn't be guaranteed to be exactly what was available as a new book. So the bookstores wouldn't do those things. And the publishers, you know, could make a little extra profit by doing something like that.
Students will be given more advanced notice on textbooks that they're going to be required to purchase. Now, that's obviously, they get a longer chance to shop around.
Right. And if you will actually go onto the website for our students, there's a link there to textbooks for each of the semesters. The author, the name of the title of the book, the ISBN number is out there. So the student, if they want to, can go out there, find their courses, find the textbook that's required. Then that gives them an opportunity, and we put that out several months before classes start.
And that's something that's been done here for a long time.
It has. We've been doing that probably for 5 or 6 years now.
Now, something else a couple of the articles that I was looking at on this on the new textbook law is the people who were putting that law in place, who were getting that law passed, are also looking toward the possibility and the progression toward open source textbooks that are free or low cost for using part of a textbook. How is that going to affect the relationship now between publishers, universities, and students?
Yeah, the open source movement is blossoming in a lot of areas, and we don't quite know what's going to happen yet with open source textbooks. It's fairly new. Many faculty take the opportunity to write those books because it gives them a chance to earn some extra income, but they do that outside of their university appointments. If open textbooks become a popular movement, we may see the universities considering that to be part of their duties and therefore supporting them to write the textbooks. That would give the chance then for perhaps that material to be out there without an additional cost to the students. Some faculty will do this, they're doing this on their own already. They'll write something, they'll put it out there on their Moodle site or out on the web for their students to use. So it's been probably a very small movement to this point, but we're seeing it blossoming now.
I'm talking with Dr. Eric Panny. He's the interim provost here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. Ultimately, putting something together like that is only going to benefit the students.
It will. It will. And, it'll give a chance with how quickly you can publish things. Now it's a good opportunity for those areas that have to remain current or quickly changing to get new material out there quickly.
And very quickly, though the summer has been busy enough, things are really about to heat up in the next few weeks here at the university.
It is. Next week, we start University Week. Our faculty will be back. And then the week after that, on Monday, classes start. And we're looking forward to seeing our students back on campus again.
The last prep session coming up on August the 20th. And really, I think one of the neatest things about starting out the school year is the week of welcome.
It is, yeah. There are so many activities going on with the convocation. There are activities to help the students who are new to campus to make this feel like home. And then we have activities for the students who are coming back, welcoming them back, giving them a chance to reconnect with their friends, get back into campus, see what's happened over the summer, see what changes have been made. So it's a very exciting time. We get the faculty involved. We get the students involved. They start making those connections that are important, that are going to be essential to keeping the students here, completing their education, helping them grow. So we look forward to having them back on campus. And the week of welcome, the move-in mania, and all the activities that are going on associated with that.
And, of course, you can find more information about the week of welcome and the last prep session on August 20th on the ULM website, ulm.edu. Dr. Eric Panny, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Jay. I enjoyed it.
Dr. Panny is the interim provost here at the University of Louisiana at Monroe. Comments or questions about the show can be emailed to woodard@ulm.edu or send them to ULM Forum, care of KEDM Public Radio, 250 Stubbs Hall, 401 Bayou Drive, Monroe, Louisiana, 71209. Podcasts of the ULM Forum are available online at kedm.org in the listening room.